All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
What's going on? Welcome back to another episode of the Wheel Wednesday Behind the Wheel podcast. I'm Scott from Koenig. You've seen me here before. If you haven't, welcome. This is a podcast where we get together with some people that we have industry relationships, and we talk about car things.
And I'm Jared, by the way. Hey, guys.
Still nobody cares. But
my mic is on.
You sure? There you go. Hey, Jared, take it for here for a second. I want to talk to Alex.
Okay.
Get it going.
What's up? What am I saying? Oh, hi guys. I put these glasses on strictly because we have a technical difficulty here, and Derek, actually our guest, can't see us. But it was supposed to be a practical joke. It's not funny, so now I'm going to take them off.
Anyhow, we're back. So with that, we're still working on a few kinks. It's going to get better, either that or it's going to get far worse. We're not really sure, but that's kind of the theme of our podcast, and that's how it goes.
There you go.
So with that said, listen, if you're watching right now, it's really important that you know that there is a giveaway going on. We just spoke about it from our live. We go live on Instagram and Facebook right before the podcast every week, 2 p.m. Eastern over on Instagram and Facebook. For the people that are joining us from that live, thank you. Welcome. Nice to see you again.
You can ask your questions here. That's right.
You have questions and answers. You throw them in. We will get to them during the podcast. I promise. So with that said, I do want to say a couple things. There is a giveaway going on. If you have watched last week's podcast or any of the lives, Keep Gunning, the YouTube channel, Keep Gunning. They're running a massive, groundbreaking giveaway.
I mean, you can get a car for free.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a really sick RX-8 K-swapped, well over 500 horsepower with headroom car. The car is a silly... I mean, Aki from Keep Gunning, he said they have well over $70,000 of their own money into this thing. And to get entered, all you have to do is go on to keepgunning.com. And they have like a giveaway prize pack. So you're buying merch, and then you're also getting enrolled into this giveaway. Now, the cool part about the giveaway is we're giving a set of wheels through the giveaway. I think we're prize number three.
I think
we're three.
Yeah.
He's giving away five prizes to date. He's starting to release them, so make sure you follow them on Instagram and YouTube. But in addition to that, I know that they're giving away the car. They're giving away a set of wheels
through us.
They're also giving away a set of tires, and I think that was through one of their partners. And they got a couple other prizes they're going to be announcing. So it's exciting. You can win some really good prize packs, and you know, go check them out. The other thing you should know is that we release a piece of content every Friday, and this Friday we will have another piece of content. They were doing a car walk around, right?
With Alec Robbins.
So we're going to take you through all the details and make sure that we, you know, show you exactly what his car is about, what he's got in there, and really show you the attention to detail. Travis is one of those dudes that takes a serious...
Alec Robbins.
Right. That's what I meant. I thought he just said Travis, right? We already did that. You can watch that one, too. Go check that out. But Alec Robbins has got a pretty cool Z.
We're operating on all cylinders today, clearly.
Except the two that are misfiring. So with that said, let's get Derek Madison in here. He is, like I said, he is a Formula Drift Pro Spec driver, and his program is, to me, is pretty unique. So let's bring him in. Derek, what's happening?
What's up, guys? How's it going?
Not too bad.
Probably better for us than you, because you can't see us.
Yeah, hey, I got you guys playing YouTube Live in the background. It's just about 10 seconds behind. We're good.
That's right. There's nothing more that should confuse you than that.
So then wait. Then I got to put these back on since he could see me now.
Why?
I'll put them suckers
the
back on.
Jokes. Like, he couldn't see me, so I was putting on sunglasses. It's just being
so stupid. For the second time during this podcast, that still isn't funny.
I'm laughing.
So, Derek, first off, thanks for taking the time to do this. I don't think we've ever had you on the podcast before, right?
No, thank you guys for having me. This is a first for me. I know we've worked together for a couple of years now, but yeah, first for me.
So it's interesting. Glad to be here. Because we've been talking for years. So we've been working with you for the past 2 years, 3 years?
2 years. So last year in Pro Spec, or Pro 2, and this year in Pro Spec. Right. The year before, we were trying to set something up, and I ended up falling into a deal of VSKFs and thought that that was the way for me. And I was wrong.
Well, so it's interesting that you bring it up, and I think it's also cool to – I want to start at the beginning, but – so talk about that for a second, just because you brought it up. By the way, this is all not preempted. We didn't talk about any of this stuff. Right. So what was it that you kind of discovered that made you have to do that change?
So obviously it goes without saying that three-piece wheels are super expensive. I'm a very, very low-budget team. I don't make a lot of money. I pay for everything out of pocket. But yeah, I mean, I do my best, and I wanted to ride out like a super cool looking car. So I came up with like a real flashy livery, and I went with the classic VSKFs, which looked, you know, really good, but they were super heavy, and you could really tell with the rotational mass being heavy. And I didn't make a ton of horsepower my first year in Pro 2. So it was kind of tough. And because the wheels were so expensive, I only had 6 spares. And if anybody is done competition with a decent amount of horsepower knows that that doesn't work very well.
Yeah.
So I had to bring my own tire changer because I knew that the tire changing companies at FD couldn't move me to the front. And so along with driving and running my own program, I changed my own tires on my own machine and all this stuff. And it just didn't work. You know, I needed something that was more lightweight and I don't know the best way to say it, just something more usable, made more sense. And, you know, I've like I said, we've talked a bunch in the past, and you guys is who I had my eyes set on for several years, and I've always liked the wheels. So yeah, it just worked out.
No, I appreciate that. And I think it's the reason I even stressed that had nothing to do with comparing wheel companies or wheel styles. Right. It was kind of because I think there's a real valuable lesson there when you move from to a more – I don't want to say pro-am program because even pro-am programs can be demanding on budget in some respect. Mm-hmm. So, but when you go from having to run a program to not just maybe hit a drift event or two, I think it really changes the game to being able to make your program efficient and functional. And that's the piece that you seem to really come against.
Absolutely. Yeah, I learned a lot of lessons in my first year, and I learned a lot more in my second year, and shoot, we're still learning lessons, but, you know, one of the first years is like, or in the first year, it was pretty much just, you didn't set yourself up for success in a whole lot of ways, and the second year, we spent a ton of money on the offseason trying to line ourselves up just to where we could have some success finally, and we ran into engine issues round one, engine issues in round two. M-Spec Performance came in and saved our butt literally in the parking lot the night before competition in Texas. Retuned to the car, went back to the hotel with like 4 logs retuned, and we got a podium the next day. So we've been doing a lot of learning, just trying to get ourselves set up to what's going to best support us in the future. And definitely the wheels was the first lesson learned, and we learned that one at round one.
Man, it's...
I was just going to ask, sorry, how much of a difference did you feel when driving, when you switched wheels? Like, can you get into a little bit of that?
So it's hard for me to really say. I had a ton of issues with my KFs. Like I said, I made a lot less horsepower, so it's really hard to make a good comparison. But I could definitely tell in a lot of respects that it was a big struggle to turn the tires over on a grippy set of tires. You know, I did my best, and at some points it worked well, but, you know, you can really tell that the wheels aren't holding back any because they're – I don't know if anyone has lifted up a VSKF 18x11 versus, like, an 18x9 aluminum wheel, like, night and day. So, you know, the car is going to feel the same respect, and then there's a lot less wear and tear on the entire drivetrain, too, because it's going through the driveshaft, through the CV axles. and it just has to turn over a lot less, just so much less drag. So it's definitely a win for sure. And I'm sure my guys appreciate putting these wheels on a lot more than the S-Caps do.
Yeah, it's a valid point. I think what's interesting, and I want to kind of bring people up to speed. So for a few years, I'm going to say 2 years definitely, before we started working together, we had spoke at SEMA, I think, both times. And we were like,
yeah,
you know, and so I had told you, I think I was, because I'm usually pretty forward with this stuff. So I probably said something along the lines of like, hey, like I could probably try to do something for you, but I don't know what it is because I have to make sure that we have enough budget to cover all the drivers we've had relationships with previously. And
right.
Yeah, I don't bring in other drivers and I don't just take anybody and everybody because my whole thing is we support these drivers through thick and thin. So, you know, we're not the company that like, oh, you didn't place well this year and we bounce on you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, you come in dead last. If we made an agreement to still work with you, we're going to work with you right through to the time you say, hey, I'm not competing anymore. And I could never bring anybody else in if I didn't have what I needed to support them. But then fast forward 2 years after speaking to each other, Derek comes up on a setup. I think we came up with an agreement. We got something going, and now, you know, he's part of that roster, you know?
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, that's pretty much literally exactly how it went. Exactly what you said was, yeah, I would like to do something, and I can probably do something, but I have no idea what it was. And, you know, that was right around the time where I just decided that more debt was a good idea and just bought some more wheels.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, the thing is, and people should understand is that, you know, and this really goes out to some of the sponsorship people, right? I think there's a valuable lesson here.
As in the people looking for sponsorship.
Yeah, of course. So these people, they're looking for sponsorship and they come and they don't understand even on one set why they can't just have them, right? They don't put up much of a value. And here is a professional driver who still worked on a partial for the beginning part of our relationship to build that relationship and put the effort in. And then we were able to then put the effort back into his program. So I think people need to understand that there is a two-way street and you can build a lot of value by just being consistent and doing what you're supposed to do and building a relationship with, you know, with a company.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, prime example, we worked on a partial and you didn't know what you were going to get out of me. But if you're looking for sponsors and let's say you land a couple, even if they're partials and you may think like, oh, it's just a partial. It's not really, you know, it's nothing and I don't have to worry about it. You know, it was just a partial. Well, you're never going to get that partial into more than a partial if you don't work on it.
Yeah.
I mean, every round I send Scott as well as everyone else, a follow-up from the round. I tell them what happened, how everything went down. I give them content to post, rather it be pictures, or if we get video and stuff like that, I'll send them that. Or the video that was just playing in the background. My brother is a filmmaker, and he threw that together for us, and we were super lucky to have that. And it was such a rad video. And I mean, hundreds of thousands of views, and I've got like 4,000 Instagram followers. So it was just such a good video, and you'll never get that unless you give back to your partners. And like Scott said, you know, they're diving in deeper and deeper, and then, you know, you're going to get that with everybody. So,
and the interesting part too is that when you do what Derek said, when you continue to give media and assets to these companies, you get to use their power, their audience, their investing to help further your own brand. So Derek sends us stuff and then we randomly post it up and tag them, and then other companies and other sponsors are going to see it. It may lead to other relationships. So you have to think of it in a modern day network sense that if you want to.
Well, it's mutually beneficial, I think, right. Is what essentially you're trying to say.
Oh,
right?
Definitely. Yeah. And so it's just really important. You know, so a lot of people come in with this thing about, you know, oh, well, it's enough that I'm out there. And you're almost cutting yourself short if you're not bringing that media to the table for these companies as well.
Yeah, you definitely add value to yourself as well, because, you know, everybody wants something for free. And, you know, some people might get lucky and get it and then never talk to their sponsors again. I've heard some stories like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you want those guys to come back, and I remember you said one thing to me, Scott, 3 years ago, you're like, I talk to every other wheel company here. We're all friends, most likely, or more than likely, we're all friends. So that's prime example right there. If you don't give any good value back to, you know, your partnering companies, the ones you fish for next are probably going to hear about that. So,
yeah, it's an interesting point. We, you know, like, and I don't know, we talk this a lot, but we know so many people. This industry is much smaller behind the curtain than it appears. And because of that, you know, everybody thinks that these companies are at war with each other, but it's not always the case. And a lot of times, while they may be competitors in a retail space, they understand that the market's big enough for everybody to exist. They kind of just have to do their game. And, you know, a lot of times, just for vetting of people, we may call other tire companies, marketing companies, wheel companies, whatever it may be, and just on a personal level, just say, hey, this dude, what's the deal with him? You know, like I said, it's if somebody's program doesn't fit our program at the time, but may be a fit for another company, we're not going to sabotage that just because they're competitors. It only hurts the people driving, and that hurts the sport as a whole, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely.
I want to talk about your program. I think you have such a unique program because there's high budget teams, there's medium budget teams, there's small budget teams,
and then there's me.
There's Derek Madison. I could explain what small budget is, but I really want to give an example that will dictate this. Last sure. year, the begin early in the season, you blew an engine.
Yeah.
And you literally said, hey, I need some help here. I made a t-shirt and I need you to spread, you know, not us, but like everybody. You needed everybody to spread the word, because the only way that you could afford to replace the engine and still have enough money to go to the next round was if you sold enough of these t-shirts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I live in St. Louis. Seattle is like 26 hours away. Right. And I get 6 miles the gallon pull my trailer. So right. You can imagine that cost alone, let alone blowing an engine up 2 weeks before.
Yeah, I mean, it's brutal. So when you're on that tight of a rope, what kind of things do you do to conserve budget and try to make sure that you can get yourself through an entire season?
You know, like I kind of said earlier, the beginning of last year, we did a lot of things that set ourselves up on the off season to prepare ourselves as best as possible for the year, rather than not just be financially, but making sure that we have all the things that we need, as far as like stockpiling up on supplies, rather be oil for the car, yada yada, preventative maintenance. I mean, even as petty as it sounds, my mom's office had stacks of cases of water just ready. And I know it's like $5 a case of water, but you know, everything costs. And when it comes down to 2-3 weeks before that event, goodbye paycheck, because that's all going to travel. And you know, people don't think about all that stuff, like as far as hotel and then fuel and then tire consumption is just insane. And then some of these bigger budget teams are getting free tires on top of it. So not only are they high budget, but that's less they're even having to pay for right there. But we really just set ourselves up with that and, you know, try to be as frugal as we can about our money. And pretty much all I spend money on is food and drifting. So that definitely helps. I try to come home for lunch as much as possible. Luckily, I only live like 15 minutes from my house and we get an hour lunch. So I come home and eat. And I mean, that's it. I don't do the whole ramen noodle budget or anything like that. I think I'd die. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. You just set yourself up as best as possible to succeed, and literally every single aspect. We try to buy plane tickets. Like my dad works for himself, so he drives my rig everywhere.
That's awesome.
And yeah, so super fortunate because I have 3 weeks vacation at work, which is a lot until you're driving a professional program and you got to take three days off a week. But so it's nice because instead of spending those 2 days travel plus 3 days off for racing, you can, if you can count, you can already tell in past 3 weeks. So it's nice having that Tuesday night after work. Me and my mom will get on a plane together, and we'll shoot out there, and we'll meet up with my dad, and we'll go set up on Wednesday.
So wait, ramen doesn't cover the five food groups? Like that's
I
not
mean,
covers
nutritionally
seven food groups, including
seven.
it
Oh,
might,
see, there you go. That's
it might. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we're like you said, we are definitely a very, very low budget team, and it's tough sometimes. We definitely sell a lot of shirts. Like, I don't know if you guys saw, but I blew my truck up on the way to New Jersey.
I
So,
unfortunately saw.
same story as last year. My dad was about 8 hours into the trip, and he pulled off into a truck stop and heard it knocking, and he's like, "Uh-oh." So I said, "Just park the truck. We don't need to be dealing with anything else or taking a guess or taking a shot at anything." Luckily, one of my friends who also sponsors me, Hell Horse Performance Mustangs, he lets me use their company's stacker trailer for the year.
Wow.
And he just happens to be one of my best friends too, so he's like, "Just come get my truck." And so me and my mom canceled our flights. I took the next day off work, went and got his truck, went and picked my dad up in Ohio, and we continued on to Jersey. We got super lucky; we were able to make it. We ended up getting the truck home, and I actually just did another one of those T-shirt fundraisers to try to pay for the truck engine. So yeah, it's you're always getting curveballs thrown at you. That's
So the short of the
racing.
story here is that you need to go follow Derek Madison because he brings out a whole line of clothing throughout the season
Hey,
that's imperative to
everybody
his
likes
program.
shirts. I don't know about you guys, but I mean, I've gone to my fair share of racing events, and
Yeah.
you gotta buy something to show that you
Right.
went, right? Otherwise,
Oh
you never
my
win.
God.
So
it sounds like a Netflix series with
it's
the
just
drama that's
so
happening
your
in the back.
parents, they go everywhere.
Yeah, my parents rock, dude. They're super inclusive, and I love it.
It's so interesting. So tell me the role your mom plays as part of your program.
My mom is big behind the scenes. If I did everything as far as food, drinks, and everything for the guys, we'd have a case of water, we'd have a case of beer, and we'd have sandwich meat.
Right.
But my mom is super rad, and she will literally make full on food before we go and
Yeah.
freeze it and bring it. And in Texas last year, we had Italian beef sandwiches, and we had fajitas last round in Jersey. I mean, you name it. She's got us figured out. We got all the drinks we need, and her and my dad help make the food and get everything ready. Yeah, I mean, it's super awesome. My dad, like I said, drives the rig, and he spots from the stands. He's my crew chief, but he knows about cars, but he doesn't do any of the work on the car really. He just kind of helps figure stuff out and keep the ball rolling. So we're definitely a very family-oriented team, and all my crew are like my best friends too. So it's pretty rad.
And I'm sure the guys appreciate not having to say, "Hey, can you throw me the thing of bologna and the can of cheese whiz?"
Yeah. Me and my dad would be okay with it, but yeah.
So we got a message. I believe you're getting a hello message from your girlfriend's BFF.
Hey, what's up? How's it going?
I'm also like pretty. When you start talking about parts, because you talked about stockpiling on supplies, and it's really easy to think about the stuff that you would need to maintain and continuously run the program. But one of the things that people don't really think about when they first go out is the amount of spare parts that they will need to continue to run the program successfully. Because the truth is, if you don't have any spare parts, the first time you have any incident or, you know, just the stress of running an older chassis for so many years on a combination of stock and aftermarket parts, you're going to have failures. What did your stockpile of stock spares or your spare pile look like at the beginning compared to maybe year two?
Oh, baby. So the first year, I had spare inner tie rods. I had some broken coilovers from like when I first built my Pro-Am car. And I had an extra set of rear suspension arms that ISR had helped me out with. And that is it. I had literally no spares. I think I had an old serpentine belt tensioner and a backup belt. And that was all I had, you know. And that was part of our year two preparation. You know, some partners helped us out with some spare parts. We ended up buying, actually, finally, a second set of Wise Fab, which is, as most people know, very expensive.
Yep.
My friend Kevin Lawrence had a couple extra sets from years past.
All right, Kevin.
He's like, hey,
yeah.
He gave me a call. He's like, hey, I know you need some help. And like, I got this extra Wise Fab. You're the only one I know on the V1 kit. You need it. And I'm like, yeah, how much? And, you know, he ended up throwing me a super sweet deal, and that helped a lot for the year. You know, we're still don't really have a backup set of coilovers yet. You know, we're waiting on those. But as far as that goes, we pretty much have a spare part for everything on the car, at the exception of subframes. And we're still on the stock 350 Z diff, so getting spares for the Z diff and axles is pretty cheap. And we obviously don't have a spare motor or a spare trans because, you know, who's got $35,000 laying around? Because I know I don't.
So you talked about the stock diff using a 350Z stock diff, right? So that's kind of something that we talked about with Alec Robbins a little bit. And so the 350Z obviously has a few different versions of differentials. And because you could just drop the pumpkin out, and, you know, some people, if they don't have quick changes, they use maybe a couple different versions of the 350Z diff. You guys do that too or not really?
I would love to say yes, but I have two of the same ratio. That's it.
Right. I understand.
They're hard to come by. I mean, for being a stock car, you know, it's hard to come by. And then people are wanting such an insane amount for them these days. And I'm too stubborn. And I just like, no thanks. I'm good.
Yeah,
and luckily the car makes enough power that I'm just like, we'll just mash the skinny pedal and pull out. It'll be all right.
So you just take basically the open diffs and weld them up, right?
Yeah, yeah. I have the LSD diff, the 350Z one. It's like a 3.6-ish, and we took it apart, and it's weldable because the way that the LSD is, you can still weld it. Still got spider gears. It's got like a viscous clutch in it, so it still kind of has spider-ish gears, if that makes sense.
Right.
But
when you take the LSD, when you take the vicious, LSD, isn't it, do you think that is there any advantage there versus just not taking an open diff and just welding it up?
So and the 350Z is a little bit different. So in the manual 350s, they have the viscous clutch VLSD, which only comes in a 3.6, I believe. And then the open diff is a 3.4. Something like that, you know, and they only come in the open. Whereas when you get into the 370s and G37s, they have like a 3.9 or something similar to that. So that's what Alex got going on. And I know Hurst, I believe, did the same last year as well. I think he's on a quick change this year. But we all drove MDU together. So we're like all super tight. So we kind of share info, and them two put me onto the 350Z diff because I know they're making good power and holding up. So I was like, it's better than what I got. I was on stock diff my first year, and I broke a stub shaft in Atlanta, and it really set us back. So we knew we needed something, and quick change was just not in the budget. So
right, it's interesting that you could take these 350Z diffs though, and because they're kind of quick swapping. You can kind of swap
bolts
out ratios at least a little bit.
Yeah, 3 bolts for the pumpkin, 12 bolts for the axles, and then I mean you can. If you know your way around the car, you can get them in and out in 25 minutes, maybe.
Right. Yeah. It's not bad.
Why don't you go to a quick change and sell him yours?
Because I don't have a drift car.
Yeah, but you do have a Z.
You could just buy the quick change and give it to me. Then. That sounds like a good alternative.
Like that's a better look, right? We'll just buy the quick change and give him the quick change. What does your program look like today? How much effort are you putting in comparison to 2 years ago? Same type of effort, still everything yourself, late nights, the whole thing?
I'm going to give you the biggest knock on wood in the world right now. I have not pulled my car out of the trailer from New Jersey, and I have only an oil and filter change planned before St. Louis.
I mean, so, I love that. And nice. I'm terrified all in the same thing, you know? Like I don't even want to talk too much more about it because I feel like I'm going to F the whole thing.
Yeah. Actually, my friends and I are going on a car cruise in St. Louis this weekend. So I got to get it out probably today or tomorrow. I'll do an oil change on it and take the FD car out on the street for a night. It'd be a good time.
That's cool. I mean, you could never do that with something like that around here because you'd make it 12 feet.
Yeah, I mean, I've got plates on my car. It's insured. It's got brake lights. The only thing it's missing is turn signals, and it's louder than anything. So that's the only problem there. But, you know, you get a lot of weird looks, but, you know, you get some cool looks, too. I got tagged in a Snapchat story. Somebody making fun of Paul Walker or something, Fast and the Furious. I was like, oh, sick. This is what you get when you drive this around.
Oh, man. That's, like, not the post you need to be in, either.
No.
What do you do every day for work?
I'm a store manager of O'Reilly Auto Parts. Okay. So it's a long day.
Is it beneficial in any capacity for maybe store discount?
Yeah. I mean, it's good for oil and stuff like that. And we don't get a huge discount on oil. But, you know, just having like the abilities and the parts knowledge. I've been doing it for 10 years, so I'm pretty resourceful and pretty good at it. So at this point, I can pretty much find anything. And if I can't find it, it probably doesn't exist. Or at least not available to us existence-wise, I mean. So I'm able to get like OEM interchanges for some aftermarket stuff and stuff like that. It's able to save me some money. And we can actually get quite a bit of AC Delco stuff and pretty much anything like LS engines. They pretty much want an AC Delco sensor. They're going to act up. So, yeah, there's definitely some benefit to it. And because I've been there so long, I get a good amount of vacation. So I'm able to take the time off. And I've been here for so long that there's a pretty good shot I'm not going to lose my job anytime soon. So it's definitely comforting being able to go out of town all the time.
Well, and it's good that it allows you and affords you the flexibility to take that time off. Because, you know, FD competition, when they come around and there's, you know, I mean, I know you only have four rounds, but you have four Thursdays that you have to be there, four Fridays that you have to be there, and you also have to travel. So you definitely are getting off on Wednesday.
Yeah, well, we set up on Wednesdays, and most of my guys can't get off. So I got to go and set up with my dad. And, you know, we set the tents up, get the car out, do a bolt check, yada, yada, because first thing Thursday morning we practice. So I have 3 days off every week right there. And then we try to fly out late Thursday so I don't have to take off work. So it's definitely, flexibility is nice.
Yeah, I would say that it's one of those things that, you know, you just don't, like all these guys, it's real easy to flip open the live stream on, you know, Friday or Saturday and think like, you know, oh, it's just, you know, this stuff comes together pretty quick. But you don't realize how hard it is and how much work and planning goes into these programs until you kind of are the one doing it, you know?
Yeah, like you said about the late nights and stuff like that. Last year, I was barely ever home. You know, I work 6:30 to 5 every day. And, you know, if things don't go well at work, you're not working until 5. You're working until 6, 7 sometimes. And I went straight to my parents' house, which is where I keep my car, in their garage every day after work. And I wouldn't even stop at my house to go get food most of the time. I would just go there and I'd be there. So anywhere between 10 p.m. or 2 a.m. And it was an everyday thing because, like you said, we blew the car up after round one. We blew the car up at round two. After round two, we had a month and a half off, so I did a complete rebuild on the engine. And so, yeah, we did three full rebuilds last year. I think we did head gaskets four times. So we spent a lot of money. If it wasn't for all that, all the people reaching out for the t-shirts last year, we would have been out after the second round, you know, because we're a team that sometimes we're lucky to get 12 tires for a round of drifting and that doesn't cut it. You know, the competitive teams bring 30 tires. And sometimes we're like, yep, we're going to practice four laps. We're going to go into qualifying. And so, yeah, last year was slave work making this program work. Luckily, it's a little easier this year.
That's crazy, man. It's like, so what engine are you running now? You're running a 6-liter LS or are you running
6.2? Last year I went into the 6.2 and it's like fully built. It's nothing like super insane. It's Eagle crank, Eagle rods forged, and then CP Krillo pistons. And then we're running factory heads, just with like valve springs and aftermarket valves and stuff like that. Comp cam, and all of it was thrown together by Race One Engineering. My friend Reed down there has built my engines or done engine or head work for me since I got into Pro Am. So, you know, we just kind of stuck together and he's a good guy. So,
any other power adders or is that it?
It's got a factory LSA supercharger and runs on the 85 and it is spun to the moon. She's overspun big time, like 36%. And they only recommend 34%. And they only make pulleys to take it to 40. So we're almost there.
Man, so how much power does your car make to the wheels now?
Right at 800. So,
which is a good number fastest for pro spec.
Yeah, it's not the fastest or highest horsepower. But I would say we have probably the top five fastest cars. You know, Austin Mata's fast. Yeah, I don't even know. That car's so fast. I don't understand it.
It's incredible how much that's changed in 5 years. Like five years ago, Pro Spec 600 horsepower was like there.
Insane.
And now these guys are pumping out 1,000 plus horsepower in some of these cars.
Yeah, like my friend Andy Lewis took like a 500 horsepower 2J or maybe 550 or something like that and got second place in the whole series, I'm pretty sure. Like, now if you brought 550 here, you'd just get swamped.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Not a chance.
So,
yeah.
Give us a little look at your car right now. Right now, year two, you know, 2 years into under your belt, modification wise, where are we at with the car?
Nothing's pretty much changed since the first year. We've been lucky to have no major crashes. So, we've gone through a couple rack opinions. So, front to back of car, I mean, it's just an S14 Origin Aggressive kit or knockoff Origin Aggressive kit in some extents. V1 Wise Fab, we have had it since we built the car 4 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that. So Silver's two-way North America coilovers, they're awesome. They ride super good on the street and they perform super well on the track. So I absolutely love them and I will recommend them to anyone. Like, I'm a dealer for several coilover companies, and when people are like, yo, what can you get for coilovers? The answer is just Silvers, because I'm not even just saying that because, like, they're a partner of mine. I've driven on every single brand, and they are by far the best riding, and, you know, most of them are going to perform well if you get a digressive two-way, but, like, you get literally both ends, like, everything about them is just rad. But other than that, you know, I said WiseFab, stock rack, Josh McGuire rebuilt it and like revalved it and stuff like that, he does. And then we got a PBM drop knuckle on the back, ISR adjustable arms, 350Z diff. We upgraded to a GeForce GSR dog box last year. Best move we've ever made.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, right?
Yeah, our first year was on a T56, and me and my buddy rebuilt it in the garage, and he knew what he was doing. I didn't. But even after the fresh rebuild, it was like finding gears in the heat of the moment, it's just tough. Like in the keyhole, having one shift from.
What was that?
Crap out of the car in fourth gear, going like, you know, 20 miles an hour, and so making that change and not even having to think about shifting anymore, and it's just spring loading right into whatever gear you want. It's just awesome. Love that thing. But yeah. I mean, it's a pretty simple car. We've made no adjustments, really. The only thing that's radical is the engine and trans. And, you know, if you don't have that, you may as well not even show up to Pro Spec anymore, like you said. But super basic.
So that's it. Here's my question. Hypothetically, because, you know, what's a podcast without hypotheticals?
Right.
Okay. Hypothetically, you podium and earn a Pro 1 license. Do you make the jump, or do you hold yourself back and continue to get more seat time in Pro Spec?
You know, this is tough. You know, it goes both ways for me. I've told pretty much everyone under the sun that I'm confidently going to do so well this year, and it has not gone that well so far. I'm a firm believer that if you don't get at least two podiums and or good results, you shouldn't make the jump. You know, if you're top 16 in it and or top 8 in it, and that's what gets you the points to get in, congratulations, that's awesome. Like, that's a huge feat. But you're just – and Pro 1's going to probably be a waste of money at that point. However, I'm also at the standpoint of you get better with better drivers. You know, you see drivers make the jump, and, you know, they'll be the best drivers in Pro Spec, Pro 2, whatever you want to call it at the time, and they'll make the jump, and they're still getting wrecked, you know. So, and I mean, not everybody, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but, like, the driving caliber in Pro 1 is just insane. So you're going to get better with it. So I want to try to, but that takes us back to the money. That takes us back to the vacation time and all that stuff. But I fully plan to podium in St. Louis because that's my home track. I have no more seat time than any other Pro Spec driver, you know, that's been in as long as I have. But, you know, it's just something about that hometown crowd to get you going. And I felt super confident on that track last year. And then we had the engine failure and our top 32 battle that kind of pulled us out of it. But let's say I podium in St. Louis. Maybe we do really well in Irwindale. I would consider it. I think that I definitely need more seat time, especially in the chase position. It's really easy to get lost in the smoke and such. You know, I'm relatively confident in my leads. But yeah, I mean, it really just depends on how these last two rounds go. But if we end up finishing eighth, it's probably not going to be the move to make. But if we finish above that,
yeah,
definitely consider it.
It's interesting to hear. You know, this is a question I've asked more than a few Pro Spec drivers or Pro 2 drivers in the past. And the reason is because, I mean, you covered both sides of the coin, but
right.
Those are usually the two arguments. Either the argument is, no, I wouldn't make the move until I can dominate consistently. And there's other people that take the stance of, no, you know, like you if you get the opportunity to move up, you move up because you instantly will get better performing around better drivers. I'll even go one step further and say that I've had people even give an opinion that, yeah, you perform with better drivers, but it's actually easier to get better in part because of the fact that the drivers in Pro 1 are so much more consistent. You can trust them more, especially in chase runs, to know. And so you just brought up the smoke and it immediately brought me back to that thought of, okay, why that consistency of knowing where they are is so important.
Absolutely. I've had a lot of practice runs, you know, washed out from mistakes in the lead drivers.
Yeah.
You know, same with me and me in the lead, you know. So, yeah, I mean, Pro 1 is – I could argue about that from every single angle forever, you know.
Yeah, pun intended.
Yeah, right. I would say I'd probably try to make the jump, you know. There are some drivers who have gotten points enough in the past to move them up into Pro 1 that should definitely go, some that should maybe go, and some that should definitely not go.
Yeah.
I would probably put myself in the maybe class right now. I know that I wouldn't do well if I went up there. I could qualify okay. But, you know, as far as a battle standpoint, you know, I probably wouldn't get very far. I'd maybe win one battle depending on, you know, all how the world aligns itself that day. But, you know, along with driving with better drivers, you get to drive twice the amount all year. And I'm sure I could speak for a lot of Pro Spec drivers. I don't drive much outside of pro events. And when I do, I use scrub tires. or a different tire than what I'm on. So the practice is not as relevant as being on a pro track. And my car is expensive to operate. And I mean, although it's only on E85, which is relatively cheap, you know, the program's big and you're still taking a big program to a local track. So I don't get to drive much besides just the pro rounds. So my progression is limited a lot to that. So just making the jump to Pro One and getting the exposure to different tracks, different drivers, and just driving more, I think would really prepare you for Pro Run more than anything. Most people are going to struggle their first year just because of the unexpected jump. It's just so big. Usually do pretty well in their second year or have a much better shot at it, at least.
Have you utilized any of the simulator video gaming type driving stuff yet?
Yeah. I'm sitting 3 feet from it, actually. I have a pretty cheap simulator. My friend made like a sweet rig and has like full S14 interior basically sitting in it. And I mean, it's just a cheap Logitech, but it's a rad setup. And, I drove Texas for the first time 2 years ago, and I drove it on sim first. You know, most people go out to the new track, especially as big as Texas is. You can't see most of it from the start. You can't gauge how big it is, how fast you need to go. But I just drove it on sim, and I did a pretty bad job at it. But I went right out and linked the course and put a qualifying run down my first lap. So it is definitely worth its weight. You know, before every round, I practice on the sim. And even though my sim is so cheap and not super realistic, it goes miles. I can only imagine if I had like a $1,500 sim set up that I could actually practice on and it'd be relevant practice. You know,
I'm a firm believer. A lot of these Fanatec setups and stuff like that, where they have all the direct drive now and really good inputs and feels and adjustable, you know, pedal pressures and stuff like that. So, I mean, even at the level that you have with the Logitech setup, you still feel that there's a lot gain there, and it's real enough that you can at least get a sense of the course and speeds and at least maybe some kind of visualization of how you would enter, you know, certain parts of the course.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it goes miles. I mean, even a bunch of just like local drivers that come out for their first event, who have played sim for a year or whatever, they come out and they rip their first event. It's like, you learn quite a bit. You know, you learn dynamics and, you know, the feel of driving and counter-steering and figuring that out. And in tandem, especially, I'm the type of driver that, you know, you only get so many laps when you go out there. Trying new stuff is, you don't want to throw a lap away. You know, so I've tried so many things in sim because you get unlimited laps, unlimited tire wear, yada, yada, that I've tried things that have learned so much from, like left foot braking, never tried in real life, learned it in sim, took it straight to the track, perfectly executed. You know, it's like, firm believer for sure. I would recommend anyone that drifts to buy a sim at any expense, rather it's the $200 Logitech or the $2,000 whatever. I would definitely recommend it. If it's in your budget, do it.
Why don't we have a sim here yet at Kona?
Are you buying one?
No.
Well, that's why. I mean, I speak to Travis Reeder quite a bit, and so Travis is like one of those guys that uses, you know, he's got a good setup and he's kind of always sending me links to for sale when people get rid of their setups, because like I want a setup because I think that there's nothing better. I don't have the time to go. You know, we're in an area where you just don't get a lot of grassroots events. And so anytime you would want to go do anything, except for maybe some parking lot autocross, right? Anytime you want to do something, you have to travel hours. And it's just one of those things, like, I want to be able to drive more. I also don't have the time to prep and do all this stuff. And so I've been like really trying to, I really want to put together a sim. I just have no way. I'm not a video game guy. I've never been that gamer, so I don't even know where to start, you know?
But you've tuned DSMs. You could figure it out.
No, I
mean, come on, man.
I'm, No, that's real life, though. That's real life.
I get it. I'm not like a big PC guy. I got lucky that my brother had built a PC like 12 years in the past.
Right.
And so I just downloaded it, and it luckily Assetto Corsa is a dingy enough game that it was still run on this old PC.
Yeah, yeah.
And I downloaded it, and just my friend came over and he's like, "This is how you do a mod." And I'm like, "What's a mod?" And he taught me how to like download all the cars and all the tracks and stuff, and made it pretty nice. And luckily my friend recently upgraded everything in his computer, so I'm finally becoming a bit of a computer nerd a little bit. And I bought everything, all of his old stuff off of him, and got a sweet little rig going. And but I feel you there, because I'm not a video game guy, not a computer guy. I play Call of Duty. I think everyone's tried that at least once, but that's it, you know. So getting all this together, I had to have so much help from my friends, and I had no idea where to start. I just bought this Logitech, and I'm like, well, now what?
Damn it, Derek. Now I feel like I have to go.
You do have to.
You know what? I'm going to do it.
Facebook Marketplace, man. That's where I got mine. I paid like $125.
I check it out a lot. I just, you know what? You see all these different type of components, and you're like, how do you know? Like, you know, are they going to work? Like, I'm a Mac guy. So like, I don't even have a PC. I got to get a PC and start there. And then,
Biggest expense.
Yeah. That's
the biggest expense.
Yeah.
I think I've got like 1200 in my PC. So yeah. And that's not even an expensive PC.
Right. Yeah. It's insane. I know. And they got all these like pre-built ones now that you can buy. Like, and I don't know, but I do want to, you know, we live in New York, and we're not too far from New York City, probably about 25 minutes out, and
without traffic.
Well, that's fair. But so what ends up happening is you get too many people, like I used to drag race when I was a kid, all those tracks gone, shut down. Like it's the classic, you know, symptom of, racetrack is there for a million years. People buy the land next to the racetrack. They hear it's loud. They immediately want to shut the racetrack down, and then the developers take the land, build houses. And that's happened to us all over. Yep. And you could never get any type of real good event here on the island at all. So I got to find something to do.
Yeah, that's one of my good friends. He's got like the full Fanatec set up, and you know, he sold his drift car, and he was between cars. He's like, man, I gotta do something. So he dropped the bomb on a Fanatec setup, and he built himself a rig with like the same thing as he's the one who built mine. He built like a BMW rig, and it was insanely cool. And you know, that held him over for a couple of years until he was able to get another car. And you know, he's same with him. He's learned a lot. I can't wait to see what he does when he gets back into a drift car. He's probably going to go from like a good driver to like, oh my God, who is this dude? He's so good. Oh, wow. So, yeah.
No, it's crazy. I want it like, and I want to do one of those simulators one day where like you cut up a car and like put it onto your wall. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the whole interior.
Yeah. No, that's sweet. And that's what I wanted to do. But instead I just did the dumbed down version. It's got a dash and then all the center console and stuff, and it's got a racing seat and it's carpeted, but it's sweet. You should definitely do it. Just buy a whole car and put it in the living room.
Oh my God. That's his wife would love him. My wife would kill me. Yeah. I'm at that stage where anytime Amazon comes to the door and it has my name on it, I'm always like, man, I wish they would have like dropped it by the garage.
So Sim's good, that'll go over well.
I just got to make sure I get it all in one box, you know.
Or you meet somebody on like a Thursday night on Facebook Marketplace and grab a nice Thrustmaster T300.
I know,
some cheap. She'll never know.
I got to mount it on wheels and make it so it can roll in and out of the garage, so that I can like do it in the garage and then push it out and then hide it and bring it back.
Is that what the two-car garage is going to be for?
It might be. Oh, God. Man. Oh, let's see. Tyler Wertman. Yeah, he said it's unfortunate that people purchase property near racetracks and they complain because it's like it's the way it always goes. I mean, now even – what is it? Houston Speedway, I think, just a dragway just shut down. So – It's like, you know, it's one of those things. You know, it just that's the way of the land, and unfortunately, especially if people that have been following this whole SEMA and the RPM Act and realizing how involved the EPA has gotten in you know, kind of going after people that sell anything that modifies vehicles, you're in a pretty bad situation for car people that want to actually use their cars.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you buy a house next to an airport or a train station, like, are you going to shut that down?
Yeah.
Like, well, no, you bought next to it.
Listen, I'm a strong proponent for the people that buy a house at the base of a volcano. If you buy a house at the base of a volcano and then suddenly one day it takes away your house with a big stream of lava, the last thing you should be like is like, I can't believe this happened to me. Like, you know what I mean? Like that lava and big mountain that makes the lava was there far before you got there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyhow, now we're just
funny world out there.
Yeah, pretty much. So St. Louis is coming up. You're going to get the car oil changed and then head on out.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. My dad wants to do some fiberglass repair, and I said, that's a hard pass for me, but we'll just zip tie it back together. Fiberglass is not for me. He does most of my fiberglass repair, so pretty thankful for that because I hate it.
Yeah.
But we can't afford to buy a new bumper, so fiberglass repair it is. But no, I mean, we're just going to get the car out and make sure everything's good, go over everything, make sure nothing's really bent or anything like that. We have a lift in the trailer, so I do most of the stuff in the trailer, ironically. So I'll do the oil change and stuff in there and do a full bolt check and everything before we roll the car out for this car show or car cruise, and then we'll do it again, make sure it's all bolt checked and everything's good. And I'd love to do some like fun stuff in St. Louis since like it's my hometown and you know all the drivers are coming in, but yeah, I don't really know what to do, like a car show or something like that. But you know, a lot of the guys would never get a car out of the trailer or it won't be there early enough, but
right,
be rad,
man. There's got to be something good you could do, you know. But
yeah,
either way, listen, I appreciate you coming on to our humble little podcast here and hanging out with us for a little bit. It's always cool to speak to people that I don't necessarily get the opportunity to spend more time with.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me on. I had a good time.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what we're here for. We're here for a good time. In fact, that's what we have in the door. What do we got?
Looks like somebody has a question for him before he goes.
Where do you got it? Oh, so Tyler Wortman asks, what's your favorite track on the FD calendar?
Man, I am a full throttle guy, 100%. Faster the better. And I know it's not on the map this year, Texas. But Texas is awesome. I love Texas. The first layout was fun, kind of sketched me out going into the tire wall, but the second layout with the full speed, like through turn one, full speed, long straight, full fourth gear. And I know I'm talking, I was probably spinning 130 miles an hour wheel speed. Ooh, we were cooking. That is my favorite. Like the St. Louis first round ever, like when James Dean was still in it, that long track, that track is sick. I'm pretty bummed that we weren't able to get seating figured out, but I totally understand why we made the change to this track. It's still fun, but I am a fast track guy. I do not like ovals. I mean, they're fun and it's fun to ride the wall, but I'm a road course, fast road course guy for sure. So I'm going to say Texas.
So, but you do have to admit that St. Louis, its first year when it rained for Pro 2, was a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man,
but
It looked like a slip and slide. I mean, there was more people in the grass than were on the track.
Yeah, it was rough for sure. No, I hate rain drifting. I think I did my first rain drifting in the Pro-Am comp that I got my license in. I'd never drifted in the rain before that.
Well, you lucked out with New Jersey because you guys finished off before it rained, right?
Yeah, we really lucked out, especially with walls on both sides of the track and rain. Man. No, thank you.
It was. I'll be honest with you. It was extremely frustrating watching, pro top 32 in the rain because it's so slow. you know that they have little control. In New Jersey, they have the old drag strip that they've turned into a figure eight, and essential, or, you know, this configuration. So you have to go through two different types of payments, one, you know, definitely two times as you go through it and then back across it. So,
well, also, isn't there a divot yeah. by the wall too? So it's like you're sucked. Well,
there is
the
no
wall.
Grass section. It's just like asphalt wall.
Yeah, it's all like the whole thing is like convex, I guess. So it's like tapered. So when you go across the middle, you're now on a slight downhill. So it helps carry you to the wall. So in the rain, I imagine that was risky business for sure.
That's awful. No, it was brutal. I mean, you know, when you when it rains, you lose the speed, you lose the smoke, you lose that ability to feel like you're watching a professional round. Well, you know,
but isn't there like a visual challenge of the cement being all reflective because of the rain too? Like, does that play into it?
Yeah, and then you get water on your visor. And you obviously don't have really anything to get it off while you're driving. And being able to see is ridiculous. Definitely. Right. As soon as you get water on your visor, it's game over.
You guys should get those windshield wiper visors. You know?
Yeah. Tear offs or something.
But let's see. I think I appreciate you doing this. I had a lot of fun.
We've stolen enough of his time.
Yeah, pretty much. And we've made it this far without having too many more glitches. So
well, you jinxed
I feel like,
that now.
Well, that's why I'm trying to hurry up and end the damn thing. Well, no, man, listen, we wish you a lot of luck in St. Louis. Yeah. I hope that it's everything that you want that event to be because it is your home event. And we're going to be rooting you on.
Hell yeah.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Hopefully it goes good, and I'll definitely keep you in the loop. Hopefully you guys can make it to one of the two rounds left. Love to have you guys out. I know talk to you guys. Well, I didn't get to talk to you, Scott, and Jersey, but, yeah, hope you guys get to make it out to another one.
Awesome. Yeah, we do too. So if nothing else, maybe we'll see you at SEMA this year too.
Oh, absolutely. I'll be there.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. We'll catch up with you later.
Cool. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. You guys have a good one.
See ya.
Well, man, I'll tell you. You know, it's nice to be able to hang out with people you didn't get to speak to a lot. And I think it's interesting because I think what this podcast really brought out was so many of the challenges that maybe don't get thought of by people, maybe pro-am drivers going into pro-spec, maybe some of the fans out there that are so quick to criticize on the live stream chat about things that they don't even think of, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, like, well, I'm just saying, like, you make the point, like, right? So, like, here's the thing. You come out of the gate as a pro-spec driver, and let's say, all right, so now we're going to take away all the stuff of, okay, I worked on Tuesday night, then I went right to the airport on first thing Wednesday morning. Then I landed, you know, Wednesday afternoon. Then I went straight from there to the track, and I set up all day, and I got everything ready. And then my team doesn't come in until Thursday. So then Thursday morning, I get there early, and I pull the car out and get the car prepped, and I have an issue, but my team just showed up, and now I'm starting to, like, wrench on the car. You're doing all this stuff before you ever even started the car up. Yeah, then you got to go drive and practice and get used to the track, and then you got to get out there, and hopefully you don't have any issues. And then, you know, and so I guess I just think, like, when you watch that driver on a Friday, you know, get in there and maybe, you know, they're in a chase run, and now the smoke lines in their face, and they have to rely on muscle memory, and then the driver. Like, I'm just saying that there's so many factors that goes into this whole thing before they even get there. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing to really add to that is just the idea that I think a lot of people are really used to the pro levels of consistency. And so when they see another driver that is not able to do that the same way, they're like, oh, well, they suck. You know, they can't pull this off because of this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, you know, even the consistent drivers, like, it took them a while to to get to that. And, you know, the anxieties that, you know, they probably went through prior. Yeah, I'm sort of reiterating in a different way what you're trying to say. Yeah. There's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah, so. No, I agree. But I thought it was cool. It was nice to have him on. You know, I think whenever you get to hear from somebody that has such adversity faced against them for trying to do what they love and to see how much, I mean, like you said, everything he makes, he puts into this program. So it's pretty cool. And I don't know. Let's see. Did you guys see the F1 race at Silverstone this past weekend? No, I didn't. I heard a lot about it. It seemed seemed to come with its fair share of drama. So, you know, hey, listen, I'm not a huge F1 guy. I wish I was.
I can't say I am either.
Yeah, I wish I was. I mean, I enjoy putting it on for a few minutes here and there, and I can watch for a little bit. It just becomes extremely redundant for me. And I'll just to be fair, I have that same issue with NASCAR too. So that's not singling F1 out. It's
how dare you compare NASCAR to F1?
Well, that's fair, but
no, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
But that is fair. But my comparison isn't the sport itself. My comparison is the length and repetition that that happens at these longer events, right?
Yeah.
So anyhow, we've taken enough of your time. We appreciate you listening. Don't forget a few things. One, subscribe, like, notification bell, all that good stuff. Please do that. That's where we do all our announcements, giveaways, and different things like that. And we'd love to have you along for that ride. Number two, keep gunning. Make sure you check out the Keep Gunning YouTube channel. Make sure you go to keepgunning.com. Their giveaway is going on, and I don't want to see anybody miss out, because I think the amount of people that they have that subscribe to their channel versus the amount of prizes they're giving away versus the fact that you're just going to enter, you just have to buy a little bit of merch, I think that it's a possible decent value prop if I've ever seen one. And the prizes are huge.
I would agree. I'm definitely slacking on my end. I have to get one.
Yeah, in fact, I'm probably going to go do it like right after this just because I keep forgetting. But in addition to that, don't forget this Friday, we're dropping a piece of content. It will be a car walk around with Alec Robbins, you know. Yeah, I don't know. That's pretty much the deal. Tyler, thanks for hanging out with us.
Our number one fan over here.
And we appreciate everybody that's listening on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, all that good stuff. We appreciate it. But that's it. We will catch you next week. Take care of yourself, and we'll see you.